Pete Swan, CEO of Manx Wildlife Trust, and today we're looking at growing your own food at home. And Manx Wildlife Trust, very supportive of things that help both people and nature to thrive. And we know that growing your own food, having a veg patch at home or on an allotment, is a great way to help support us as human beings in terms of local food supply, but also creating spaces that really help wildlife. And we know our most endangered farmland bird, the tree sparrow, really likes large areas of veg patches that bring in those invertebrates that might be a pain for us as gardeners, but nature has the solution. The birds will come in and eat them for us.
Wild thing, I love you.
Well, here we are then, out in the wilds again for the next in our little series of Wild Man, enjoying the joys of the Isle of Man, and particularly the wild side of it and how it relates into wildlife and how you can enjoy it, basically. And one thing which came up, which actually Graham suggested, he said, why don't you have a programme about growing your own food and the benefits both for the person who's growing the food and also for wildlife in the area? And he said, I know just the man you can go and talk to about that. And happily, he's here, and we've come to his allotment. And it's Steve Wright. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
So where are we today?
We're at my plot on Johnny Watterson's Lane in Douglas, and it's run by Douglas Council.
And I have to say, we were just saying when you let me in, I've driven past it thousands of times. Never actually been in. It's a great site.
Yeah, there's more than 60 plots, some half-size, some full-size. Been here for about 16, 17 years.
Wow. And how many do you see? A lot of people around here? Is it busy?
Yeah. Sunny days brings them out more. On a cold winter day, it might be just me and a couple of other people. But yeah, no, it's there's a good rotation of people as well.
And again, I didn't realise they are really good sized plots. And you were saying that sort of you can get a full size plot, which frankly, I think if you had the time and the energy and the skill, you could easily feed a family of four, I think, from it. And then there's like half size plots as well.
Yeah. So a full size plot, about £170. And then for the half size, then it's £85.
And we're just at the dividing line. We've come in from where the car parks and where there's a wonderful, I wish I had a trailer in my car. There's a great big pile of dung there, but I don't think I'm allowed to nick it. It looks really good stuff. And we've come through the first section. So we're now a sort of a mixed hedge and hawthorn sort of dividing line. So the plots behind us are the older ones, and we're going through to the sort of slightly younger ones.
Yes, that's correct.
Right, let's tootle through here then. It's a wonderful spot to come through. And here we go. And then, here we go.
So we've got the hawthorn and blackthorn hedge here, and this year it's been quite good for wildlife. So we've got, first of all here, it's a wren's nest, and so it's about the size of a melon. It's within that hawthorn hedge itself.
Yeah, really well tucked in.
Chest height. The entrance hole is on this side.
Yeah, I see it.
And yeah, if I get you were it. Able to kind of put your hand inside, it's quite warm and cosy. It must have been quite nice for the wrens this year.
And that's incredibly well constructed and very well hidden. It's sort of tucked in, if you can imagine the hedge, it's sort of just recessed back a little bit. And quite, you wouldn't think it was sort of possible to build such a structure just in between the sort of cross network of twigs in there. But it's never ceases to amaze me when you see birds doing this, how they actually managed it and how they started off.
Yeah, and this structure is a dome, and there's only two birds on the Isle of Man that create these domed nests. So if you think of a robin or a blackbird, they have a kind of a cup nest. Well, this is more of a sphere shape. So there's wrens and there's long-tailed tits, and they both create these sorts of domes.
Terrific. Empty now, I assume. Will they use it again?
They might use it over winter. On a cold night, wrens will gather at the same nesting site, and there may be four or five wrens all cosy in there on a cold winter night.
Can't say I blame them. It looks an ideal spot to go. And yeah, you can just see if you duck down here and if I sort of look in under the hedge, you can see the entrance Steve's talking about going in there. And you can imagine it would be a wonderfully snug place to spend a cold winter's night if you're a little bird huddled together in there. Brilliant. Love it.
And then very close to that, we've got step over here. Was occupied by great tits this year.
Okay, so just into the plot here.
And this is at head height. The nest is close to the bushes, so the parent birds could fly to the bushes and then just nip in.
Yeah.
So it's not an open site. This has got a tiny little egg still in it, so
goodness.
That didn't hatch. It was a successful nest, though. I saw three or four birds fledging from this site. And this is made of hair and moss and grass. The hair, can you see, it's kind of got a gingery colour to it.
It has, yes.
My neighbour has a gingery-haired dog, which occasionally visits the allotment. And I think it may have molted, and the great titters then collected some of that for its nesting material.
It's brilliant, and a lot of sort of what looks like white or silver sort of hair as well.
Might be mine.
I was going to say. I wasn't going to say. I was far too polite. Could have been mine, but I don't spend here long enough. Yeah, and just this single egg nested right in the middle. It's incredible. And again, you look at it, you think, how many trips, how many beakfuls is that? And the answer is thousands, I would have thought.
Yeah, and I will clear this out because sometimes they can have, you know, parasites and other things that they don't want there every year. So I will empty this nest box out and then they can rebuild in the new year.
And important to have this box sort of at head height, as you're saying?
Yeah. This has been occupied by great tits for pretty much the duration of my time here. So I've had this pot for 12 years and every year I've had great tits in here. So it's north facing, so it's not in the direct heat of the sun during the summer. There's lots of ivy around it, so it blends in. And I just need to abandon the area for a month whilst they're nesting. I mean, I can pass by, but they do tweet a lot at me if I do it.
Not happy.
No. they sound their displeasure.
Oh, I bet.
I'm going to pop that back in and I'll tidy it up later.
Lovely. So that's a great spot. Wonderful.
So we've had wren nesting, we've had great tit nesting.
As well, and let me just go up the path here. Some great veg here as well, by the way. We'll come back to them in a minute. So passing is sort of some leeks and some great rhubarb there. And then, oh, hang on, there's another box coming down here now. Some more wonderful
rhubarb.
This
is a third one. And perhaps birds like to nest where others are nesting. Maybe it gives them a bit more security against, say, crows or magpies that might be nearby. So this is a roughly constructed nest box that I made out of a few bits of wood. And then this has been used by a robin. And there's leaves and moss in there. They use this in May time and fledged in June. That's all within...
That's within a few yards.
Yeah. All three within the...
Cluster. Literally a few yards. And will the robins come back again? Or will you clear that out and then...
I will clear that out as well, yeah.
It's so amazing, really. I mean, that's all, like you said, literally within a few yards of each other, and that's already sort of three different species of bird there, all sort of either in the hedge or in the boxes. And amazing when you think about it. And like you say, they've sort of come every year since you've been here.
Yes, yeah, and not in exactly the same site. So that's the first time that the robins have nested in there. That's the first time the wrens have nested there. I've had a chaffinch nest right next to us here, and I've had a song thrush nest just over there. So it's popular with lots of different species, and it's fascinating. I mean, I look forward to each spring and seeing what arrives. And that wren nest, I only discovered that a couple of weeks ago.
Well, it is very well camouflaged.
Yeah, so I didn't even know that was happening there. And so when the leaves are now falling and the hedgerows are becoming more open, have a peek inside, see if you can spot a nest. You might be surprised in your own gardens what may have been using your garden to nest.
Absolutely. And I know I can speak from experience and that in my little patch at home, again, exactly that, when I'm sort of towards the end of the season, if I'm clipping back a little bit, you sometimes think, oh gosh, exactly that. I've come across a few nests which have clearly been used earlier in the year. And I know there's a tree, just an old elder, just to the right of the house, and that is sort of has got a hollow centre where a limb has died out. And for the last two or three years, there's been jackdaws have gone into that. But funnily enough, exactly as you're saying, I had a peek this year, sort of later on, and it looked like, for whatever reason, they abandoned some of the eggs in there, and that I didn't see so many young ones coming out, but I could still see when I had a careful look in with them, sort of took a picture with the phone carefully, you could see some eggs still there.
Yeah, and you can hear the wren chirping away in the background as well.
You can. A veritable, feast of sounds here. And we should say, like I said, we're just standing in Steve's plot now, and along with the wildlife, this is proof positive. You see, you can grow You can grow your veg, and because I always think when I sort of first started growing a few vegetables, it was almost like a case of you grew the vegetables and you killed everything else. But now I think it's changed a lot.
Yeah, and I think it's for the benefit of not just wildlife but people as well. So there's less usage of plant killers. I mean, some people call them weed killers, but they just kill plants. They're not distinguishing between a dandelion or your cabbages and other plants. So with people using less of that, the ground is improving. There's none of those nasty blue slug pellets lurking around, which are harming hedgehogs and birds as well. So I don't use any pesticides. It's completely organic. All of these birds that are nested around here, they're doing the job for me. It's costing me no money. I have seen robins picking off slugs. I've seen the wrens rooting around and picking off other things, and they do it. We don't need to start poisoning the ground.
And that's the magic thing, I think. If you do grow in this way and grow sort of organically, you get exactly that. If you can strike the right balance, then things take care of themselves, and you don't generally have to use any pesticides or, like say, weed killers or fungicides at all.
Yeah, and I've got some broccoli there. Now, they have been devoured by caterpillars.
Let's just go up here a bit. Yeah. So, right. Oh, I see. Yeah.
So, but they will survive. These are purple sprouting broccoli that will provide me with a crop in March, April next year. There's enough leaves there for them to happily go through the winter. And I haven't done anything to the caterpillars, but I get the occasional wasp that will fly in, take a caterpillar off the leaf, and chop it up and take it away for me, so that they're doing the job for me,
which is pretty handy. And then is this netted against pigeons, or netted to keep the actual cabbage whites off? Or
yeah, it was to keep the cabbage whites off. However, now that the leaves have got so big, they're pushing up against the netting, and therefore the cabbage whites can land on the netting and then lay their eggs onto the leaves. So the netting really hasn't worked that well on this.
No, that is a problem, isn't it? Once they actually start to sort of grow up and really, as you say, push against, because they're big old plants, sprouting broccoli when they get going. And it's also like in a raised bed system as well, which is a pretty handy way of doing things.
Yeah, it allows me to do crop rotation as well. So there's four different types of plants that I have. So onions, there's the cabbages, potatoes, and then everything else in another category. So I've got about 20 raised beds, and I've got 5 for each of those types of groups. And then I've got a little spreadsheet which I mark down what I planted each year.
Oh, that's organised.
I can avoid then planting potatoes in the same plot on the second year.
Yeah, yeah. So you can do proper crop rotation. Yeah. And again, wonderful sprouting broccoli here. So again, a few cabbage whites, but there we're all right. And then, we're on to the cucurbites now. We're on to some, what, winter squash, is it?
Yeah, and pumpkins.
Pumpkins, wow. We're talking about pumpkins yesterday, and I had a little look at Graham's. And I know a few people say, well, they make nice lanterns, albeit that on the Isle of Man you should be using a turnip.
Yeah.
But do you use them for much else? Do you make soups and stuff out of them?
Yeah, a bit of curry powder, roast them, and blend them and make a soup. I've probably got more pumpkins than I will consume.
So you've got you can hear the gravel pass in between the raised beds here as well, which is probably a good substrate to have various insects. And then just allowing some of the plants that are sort of escape, like some of these, some of the pumpkins have come out from outside of the beds.
Yeah, and then I've got wild plants that just self-sow themselves. So quite predominant at the moment is purple toad flax, and we've got bees on this. Even though it's a cold day, we're seeing bees all over this.
I was thinking there's loads, aren't there?
And then there's foxgloves as well, there's borage, and the chives are popular with the bees. And I've also got some garlic chives over there. Can you see the white pom-poms?
Yeah.
And they are just full of bumblebees at the moment.
Yeah, funnily enough, I've got a few garlic chives at home, and I've seen a few bumbles on them. They seem, I don't know what it is with bumblebees and garlic chives.
I don't know. They are really punchy with garlic, so I don't know whether they quite like garlic and they get a bit of that. You can eat the heads. They've got little popping seeds in them that you can eat. I wouldn't recommend you have some now, though, because it does linger. You will be tasting garlic chives for about an hour afterwards, so maybe not try that.
I haven't actually tried the heads, I must admit, but I must give that a whiz and see. So the stuff in the... So you just allow the paths to just naturally self-seed?
Yes, and I will try and make a channel through the middle where I can walk so I'm not stepping on things, but the sides are kind of a free-for-all. There's certain plants that I try and avoid allowing free rein. So creeping buttercup, rosebay willow herb, they will really spread and dominate the whole plot. And I had bird's foot trefoil that I let go, and then it just really got everywhere, yeah. and it was in the beds. But the plants like purple toad flax have seed pods, which are quite heavy. So it's not wind-borne seeds. So I'm not spreading all of my purple toad flax onto my neighbour's plots. This seed will just fall on the path, spread itself about, and then reappear next year. So, it's a really nice... It looks beautiful. We can see 100 bees on my plot at the moment, all over the purple toad flax. So I've got some fruit trees, so I've got a cherry. I've got a pear tree there with some fruit still on it. There is a plum tree there, and I've eaten everything that's on there. I've got bay leaves, and then I've got a separate fruit cage as well for... blueberries, blackcurrants, raspberries, strawberries.
That's gorgeous down there. And so how much maintenance? It's not necessarily the sort of thing that you can just pop up for an hour every weekend.
No. So I'm here every couple of days. And it's not a case of I need to be here to do the gardening. I need to be here for me. It's my peace and quiet. It's my relaxation. I love being here. So I'm not actually... giving up other things to be here. I want to be here as a priority over other things. And so I love being here. And one of the most important things on the entire site is the seat over there. And I would just sit down, relax, watch the walk go by. Got a nice view between the trees over there towards Lurgy Crippity. And I can watch the bees and the birds. And there's more than just gardening for me here. It's gardening, it's social life, it's eating my own produce, which I love, because a new potato fresh from the ground just tastes so much better than anything you can get from the shop.
Oh, no doubt about that. And I think there are various things, aren't there? I think new potatoes are a totally different beast. Peas, again, freshly potted peas are really, really lovely. Strawberries are excellent. Sweet corn, if you do it and eat it really quickly, is really nice. And we often have this debate if you've got limited space, because it's very satisfying growing something like onions, but if I'm really honest, I can't tell the difference between an onion I've grown and an onion I've got from the shops.
Yeah. Garlic's a bit different. I make a brilliant aioli with my homegrown garlic, because it's quite fiery, and that mixed with mayonnaise is amazing. The blueberries are much better.
Well, let's take a look. Funnily enough, I was only talking about blueberries yesterday. I've got one plant of blueberry at home, and I think last year I got 14 berries.
Blueberry plants in here. So I have to have the cage to keep the birds out. So I do like to share some things with the wildlife, but they would really plough in and take everything. And
oh, wow, this is a great bush.
Yeah, and I've also got a garden orb web spider there, and that is keeping all the fruit flies off. So that's my kind of guardian of the blueberries. And I'll pick you up. Nice couple of blueberries. I find that if you put about 4 or 5 in your mouth at once, it's better. And I'm trying not to disturb my spider whilst I'm doing it.
No, he's just hanging there, waiting to pounce. Oh, bless you. Let's try to look at that. Beautiful. So a little handful of freshly picked blueberries. Totally delicious. Ah, gorgeous. And they're just, funnily enough, I think I was watching Gardener's World only recently, and Monty was potting up some blueberries and saying, a lot of people, they without a doubt, they've become far more popular on the British menu, I think, in recent years.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people think, places like the Isle of Man, you can't grow them, you need to be in the States or something.
Well, you've got the blueberries, don't you, on the mountains at Dalby and everywhere, and this is just a different variety of that.
And again, it's just a much bigger bush. I mean, this is a sizable bush we're standing in front of now.
And then the blackcurrant bush behind you. that's finished with its crop, but this can be just full of blackcurrants. Used to have a neighbour who would come along with a carrier bag and take all the blackcurrants away, and then a couple of weeks later would return with two bottles of creme de cassis.
Sounds like a fair deal.
She's no longer has a plot. So my supply chain of creme de cassis has now failed, which is a terrible shame.
And what about strawberries? You've got some at the end there. Has that been a good crop this year?
Yeah, not bad, actually. It's been better. What has been good are currant bushes, so that's red currant and white currant. I've also got a big red currant bush in the hedge. So the one in the fruit cage is for me, and the one in the hedge is for the birds. Yeah.
Oh, that's fair. That's fair division, I think, isn't it, one way or another? And I think it's always quite nice to do that. You're right, I think, if you're wanting to grow soft fruits like strawberries and raspberries and blackcurrants, if you don't net them or do something or put a cage over them, which is much safer so they don't get tangled up, then you are going to lose a large part of your crop.
Yeah, so if I can get 80% of crop and the wildlife takes about 20%. We've got a few local pheasants, and if we don't net things, that the pheasants will be quite ferocious. There's a bed here which is covered over, and that is stocked with Maris pipers. So the plant, I've cut it down at ground level, taken away the greenery. If I was to leave the plant up, then it could get blight. So the idea is, if you take all the greenery away above ground level and take that to compost, then I've covered it in black sheeting, and I've also got a bit of netting over just to dissuade the pheasants, and also occasionally longtails might try and dig in there. But there will be a mountain of Maris pipers underneath the soil here, and these will keep, so long as there isn't a really hard frost, these will keep perfectly well in the ground.
That's a great idea. So rather than dig the whole lot up, just keep them there and cover them over.
Yeah, I have previously dug them up, stored them and in the shed and other places.
Yeah, that's what I've done.
And then they sprout.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, but if you do this, they don't. And with having the black sheeting over, it keeps them from getting too damp, and that stops the potato scab on the potatoes. So if I was to...
Oh, that's looking good.
Just need to unravel that. Right, that's a bit of orange through here.
Oh, look at that. Yeah. Beautiful.
I mean, these are big.
They're good size, aren't
they? Yeah,
they are good size and really clean as well. Really firm, no scab, looking corky. It's a whole bed full of them.
Yeah.
That's a great idea to keep you going all winter with minimum fuss, really, and just go, just like your own larder of potatoes.
Yeah, on Christmas Eve, I will come to the allotment with a big bag, collect all the roast potatoes I need for Christmas Day.
Now, that is good thinking. I'm going to have to pinch this, actually. I like this. Cut them down and keep them on. I've not tried that. Yeah. And that's the wonderful thing, I think, in that it gives you sort of a bit of joy all year round. And as you hinted at as well, it's sort of... That's the great thing, I think, with growing. I mean, whether you've got a wonderful allotment like this or whether you've got a patch at home, you can grow some vegetables. We were saying at the beginning, I mean, when I first started growing veggies back in the 70s, and I remember I used to watch Peter Seabrook he had a little plot at Pebble Mill at One. And it was all then about, you could grow vegetables at home, and it was about saving money. You know, you grow the vegetables more cheaply than you go out and buy them. I suppose that is still possible, possibly, depending on what scale you're doing at it. But I think now it's sort of moved on from that. I don't think many people grow them because they're desperately trying to save money.
Yeah, yeah. I think you will get a better flavour. You know that you can do organic. You can also grow the kind of varieties that you want as well. So you can. It's difficult to buy, say, elephant garlic in the shop.
Yeah, I see it now.
No, Charlotte new potatoes as well. I don't think you can get those, and they are amazing. If you are thinking of growing new potatoes, Charlotte or Annabelle, those are the two to go for. So, yeah, you can specialise in what you grow. And I don't know whether it's just because you've grown the things yourself, it tastes better. But
Yeah, I think there is elements of that. And as we were just mentioning earlier on, some things like, you know, freshly dug new potatoes, you're not going to get that from anything shop, no matter how good they are, even if it's in a farm shop that have been dug quite a bit before. Going out, digging them, and then literally within an hour or so, having them in the pot, wonderful. And as you've hinted at there, with the other great thing, growing like this, it's really wonderful for the wildlife. And as we're talking, there's bees down on the elephant garlic, and I thought there's a few hoverflies knocking around there as well, or something else. And there's, as you say, there's that sort of well-being aspect as well. I mean, both physically and mentally, it's good. Obviously, there'll be a fair amount of physical exercise involved in weeding and digging and bending and all the rest of it, doing the sort of stuff around the plot.
Yeah.
And then, as you say, with your, where's your chair just behind us here? It's the idea of you can sit and rest in between, or even when you're working. And you hear it time and again, people say it's like their sort of their haven, really, away from the stresses of life. And it's just so good for mental well-being as well.
Yeah, and I live in a flat in Douglas, so I don't have a garden of my own. So this is my own personal outdoor space.
And it's a wonderful one. So there you go. I hope we've given you just a flavour of growing your own food and how it can be beneficial in so many ways. It can taste better. It's fun to do. It's very satisfying. And then again, if you grow in this way, as Steve's just been demonstrating here, and stay away from as many chemicals as you possibly can, grow organically, allow a bit of nature in, allow a sort of care and share, get the right balance. You don't need the chemicals, literally, because everything just equals out, and the birds will come in, the spiders come in, you get sort of predatory insects coming in, and you don't actually need it, as is more than evident walking around Steve's plot here. So it's great for wildlife as well. So it's a win-win situation, really.
Yes, most definitely.
It is. I better let you crack on.
Thank you.
Thanks for showing us around today. Wonderful.
You're very welcome.
You see the rain? It's going to rain now, isn't it? Now I've said that.
Okay.
Lovely plot.
Wild thing.